Welcome back to another episode of Main Street Firefighting Podcast by Fire Engineering. This time we're coming to you live from FDIC. My name is Lex Shady, Chris Tobin, Dave Mellon's joining us. We're going to kind of sit and have a little discussion on training for the fire service and kind of how that relates to building construction. And we did a podcast on it in the past where we talked about a thesis on training for failure in the fire service. So we're just going to kind of hit on that some more. The biggest thing that we've talked about a lot is how do you train overhaul, right, for legacy buildings? It's not really something a prop you can build. So what are some things that we can kind of do for departments to get their, you know, especially newer firefighters up to date on the skills?
Yeah, so we walked in this room here and, you know, Dave, our guest here, was behind the, essentially behind the curtain getting us set up. And then I asked him what class he did, which would be?
The Fire for Effect, the Lost Art of Realistic Training.
And that's the big thing, right? You know, realistic training. So that goes hand in hand with kind of the mission that me and Lex have been on with Main Street Firefighting, specifically for building instruction, is that also moves into the realm of overhaul, right? So how do we train firefighters in the skill of overhaul in essentially non-realistic buildings, right? Connex boxes, your burn towers, you can't. So that's $1 million question is, well, what do we do? And we all know how important, you know, overhaul is and what could happen if we don't do overhaul. So then that's a big problem that we're trying to find a solution to. So knowing what you know and knowing we've experienced here, what are some things that maybe, tell us about what your department does in general or departments around yours for training for overhaul, brand new people.
Yeah, so this is not an uncommon issue, and it's not something that's new to the discussion, right? Like, this has been going on since I got into the fire service. You know, we used to, and I say used to, most of the time we used to, you know, burn real things. I mean, we burn couches, mattresses, you know, chairs, things like that. As I progressed through my career, obviously those things became bad and we stopped doing that. But at the same time, we were burning them in concrete buildings. This was kind of pre-Connex box concept. But we didn't have the ability to overhaul, but what we did have the ability to do was pull those things out and wet them down and see where the hot spots were still located. So primarily in my area, we had a lot of issues with knee walls. Mm-hmm. And with other types of construction that were not advantageous for just like going in, put the fire out and being done. You know, we had a lot of rekindles. We had a lot of, you know, we're standing out front loading hose and somebody goes, hey, man, there's smoke coming out of the second story again.
Right.
So we actually started building those things into our props.
Sure.
We started building knee walls into Connex boxes because you can do that, right? And it can mm-hmm. be part of the fire load, right? Just don't go in there and put in 15 more pallets.
Right.
But you can build those things into your container, put sheetrock in there. And then once the firefighters go in and actually put it out, now they do have to overhaul. Mm-hmm. They do have to start tearing out those knee walls because you can stage that fire behind mm-hmm. that wall.
Sure.
And so it gives them the clues. You know, we did try, and it's not something that we do widely, but it's something that I actually really liked. We took metal receptacles and metal plates so that they weren't plastic or you know, ordinary combustibles. But we put those, so you'd get the puffing smoke coming out of the receptacle, you know? And so again, it was those visual cues that don't violate any standard, but it gives people the ability to go in there and start tearing walls out and tearing things down. And the students really did learn from it. And so we try to incorporate that into a lot of our live fire classes. We'll frame in a portion of a wall so that maybe it's not the whole box, but the students do have to go in and start tearing that stuff out.
I found like a lot of academies they're really good at getting like the drywall simulated, like, you know, pulling ceiling and stuff, but how do we simulate pulling plaster and lath ceiling? Like, that's not something that we can afford to build, right? So how do we get them their hands on skills? Cause that's totally different technique pulling a plaster and lath ceiling than it is a drywall ceiling.
Right.
So how do we simulate that?
Yeah.
So one of the things that we did, and again, it depends on where you're at and what your building is, you know, what kind of container you're using or a pre-manufactured building. But we took OSB prior to it costing like $50 a sheet.
Right.
And we would actually rip cuts into the sheet. And so every, you know, out of an 8-foot sheet, we'd do them like every 2 inches. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so it simulated having lathe and plaster.
That is awesome.
Without that's having lathe.
Really, that's a
really good idea.
Right. Because if you take just a regular sheet of OSB and you start punching through it,
yes.
I mean, that's going to kick your butt. Yeah. I mean, right. That's going to be really, really right. hard. And so one of my guys, Dylan, who does construction, he was like, hey man, we can make it like lathe and plaster. I go, really? He goes, yeah, I'll just rip cuts like every 2 inches.
Okay.
And so you take that 8 sheet, and then once you're done, you just scrap it and put a new one in.
Yeah. I mean, eventually the cost of OSB is going to go back down. So that's hopefully. A really simple, hopefully. That, I mean, that's a really good idea.
Really good idea. And you know, I mean, it doesn't just go into the skill of overhaul and understanding what that is, also tool technique. That's right. Really the biggest thing that I see when we do hot classes, or it's just this generation, no fault of their own, just isn't used to hand tools, whether it's the technique or how to swing or how not to swing or what you know, whatever it is, that's something that they can really fine tune with that kind of prop. So there's multiple reasons for this skill. Other than obviously the firefighting aspect of it, but it's just general tool technique, tool discipline. There's a big difference between a wooden handle, a metal handle, and a fiberglass handle. You know, you got that wooden handle tool, you've really got to be fine tuned on what you can and cannot do with that. That's where you really get your discipline from. But so yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. That's something that we've kind of been trying to figure out. And I want to definitely go back home and try some of those things, because you don't always get a vacant building to do this stuff in. And if you do get a vacant building, it might not be an old one. So like you said, you know, plaster and lath is definitely the ideal situation to train in, but that's not always the case. Sometimes it's metal studs and drywall. So
we had that one we did back in February. We had the acquired structure, and it was the 1940s. Mm-hmm. And it was that like plasterboard. It wasn't even mm-hmm. plaster and lath yeah. in there.
Right. So then you catch the weird in-betweens. Sometimes you might catch some like steel mesh in there between that weird in-between phase in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. But that's something too. I mean, I can make a vacant building go a long way. That's the thing too, is when you're doing overhaul, don't just give someone a tool and go, okay, pull the ceiling. Like, give them very targeted, make it precision, right? Make it precision based task to where, say, clear a joist bay, clear one stud bay. Because now, first of all, for that to be successful, you have to know what a stud is. You got to know what a stud bay is, you know, and then, or maybe start how it should be. You know, there's a, make it methodical, like a process. So first of all, have them pull a stud bay. They go, okay, actually you need to pull the baseboards. And then they realize, oh man, now I got this big pile of crap on the ground. Now I have to dig out my baseboard. Maybe I should start with the baseboards. So I won't have that problem next time. By the way, the fire starts probably from down low and moves up anyway. So you see, that's where you start building your system. Start down low, fire moves down low from low to high, you know, so that's where they start really connecting all the dots, as well as reinforced tool technique. And then, like I said, you give them a precision based task, as opposed to, you know, here's a tool, you know, make smash go. That's not really where we want to be. So we're professionals. So
it's fun though. It's real fun. It's very I'm not going to lie.
It's fun, but at the end of the day, we're professionals, and our work should reflect that. So, and that's why I've really tried to do in my career, you know, after kind of fine tuning these skills, is I really try to, when I'm overhauling, when I'm done with it, I really try to look and go, wow, you know, like it actually is there's an objective there. It's not just random holes just punched into a wall, you know, so it actually means something for a reason. And I stopped for a reason, you know, so.
So what's the biggest thing you see with, like, I mean, not necessarily the younger generation, but maybe newer firefighters coming in and trying to do, you know, they have their first fire and their overhaul, like what are you seeing? And then what do you do for training afterwards to kind of help them improve?
Sure. So one of the things I talk about in my class, and I'm actually super open about it and almost to a fault, I'm very blunt. I mean, we have the pandemic, right? Like, we have COVID, but we've had an epidemic in the fire service for years, and it's finally catching up with us. And we're having to deal with the ramifications of it. Like, the stuff that was going on 4 or 5, maybe even like 6 or 7 years into my career, I'm now having to deal with as a company officer or as a trainer. And so what's going on is that we've made it safer, right? Which is good. We want it to be safe. But by doing that, we've taken away the realism. So now we have students who are coming out of, you know, fire academies or colleges or fire programs, and they don't understand the fundamentals. They understand how to pull a hose line. They understand how to go in and flow water. They understand how to use tools for forcible entry. But then you get to overhaul and they're like, okay, well, so you want me to punch a hole there? Yeah. It's a hole like this big.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, bro, like, listen, I need you to pull the whole ceiling. And they're like, you want me to pull the whole thing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, from wall to wall, like pull the whole room.
Make it disappear all.
Yeah. Right. And the problem is, you know, we're running less fires, right? Which we know statistically we're running less fires. So there's less chance for them to be able to do that. So that's the biggest issue that I've seen is just everything from, and it's not really applicable necessarily to like legacy construction, but I'll give you an example. What sound does a propane prop make in a burn building?
Hisses, I guess.
It hisses like propane, right? Mm-hmm. So we've had firefighters, and I've actually experienced this with a couple guys. We crawled in to a fire and they're like, hey, Cap, the fire's over here. And I'm like, no, it's not. We need to, you know, get out. And they're like, no, the fire's over here. The fire's over here. And so what it ended up being, thankfully, thank God, it was an air compressor that had the hose had burned off and it was hissing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the issue was when I asked them, I'm like, why did you think that that was fire? And they're like, that's the same exact sound that we've heard the entire time that we were in the fire school.
I never really thought about that, but yeah.
Right. And they didn't put two and two together. Right. Like they didn't understand that that wasn't the same sound in the moment. Mm-hmm. Right. Like normally if they were just like sitting back drinking a beer by a campfire, I'm sure they would have known. But so those training scars, when we recognize them, what we do is we'll pull them out and we start building some of those props. Mm-hmm. We do lath and plaster. We do some of the other construction types. We built an elevated prop where they can go in and pull ceiling. And so it's really good to identify that, but it's getting old.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing it all the time, which is good because we're fixing it. But I want to see that eventually start kind of the pendulum swinging back the other way where we don't have to.
It would be nice to see like near fire academies. I mean, we all know, like I just moved and went through another fire academy and we open the book and you have like, this is an axe, this is a Halligan. It would be nice to see them explain, like you said, the difference between the handles, the difference between the types of axes, the mechanical advantage of the hook and what all, you know, there's a flat and the beveled side and what all that means. If they knew that starting from the very beginning of their career and not having to learn it later on the job, you know, on the job training, I think that would make a big difference too. If they knew how the tool worked. And I think that's one of the problems also.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, it's all in that we're in the era of declining fire and that's reflected in our textbooks that somehow keep getting larger with less usable information. So the irony is crazy there, but that's the truth, you know? And the tool knowledge is just kind of eroding away. And then so goes what you do with the tool. I mean, take roofer for an example. Well, I mean, think about that for a second. You don't go to the roof and all of a sudden you don't need to check the saws because why do I need a saw if I don't go to the roof? So it's a trickle down effect.
Right.
And the same thing happens, less fires, less overhaul. Well, I'm not paying attention to that tool. I don't really need to know about that tool. Now all of a sudden you're promoted. Maybe you're on a panel. Now you have to write an article or write a chapter in a textbook. Well, that the tools are getting less emphasis now because people know less about them.
Yeah.
So that's just all how kind of it's a big circle. So
yeah, and truth be told, I mean, this guy, I kind of like telling this story because I'll throw myself under the bus. I have no problem doing that. But when I first got into the fire service, I'd never run a chainsaw.
Yeah.
I'd never run a chainsaw. I had no idea how to start one. And you know, during the academy in a community college, they were like, okay, here's a chainsaw, here's how you break it down, here's how you tighten the chain, here's how you put bar oil. I mean, all the different stuff.
Sure.
It was I learned it, right? Mm-hmm. And we did it and we went up and did vertical vent. And then once I got out into the field, I was a lieutenant. I just become a lieutenant for a fire department. And I got up on a roof with a guy and we're cutting. And all of a sudden it's like, man, this chain sucks. What is going on with this thing? And I'm like, I know we just changed it. And come to find out that somebody had taken it off and put it back on backwards.
Yeah.
And it's like, and when I asked the person that did it, I'm like, hey, I was like, what did you do? And they're like, oh, I didn't know that it goes on a certain way. Really?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, and that's not something that's taught a lot of places though. I mean, like, if you think about it, you have 20 kids that are in an academy class or whatever the size of it is, they might get to start this all one time.
Right.
They're not going to each get to pull it apart and look at all the pieces of it. Or if they do, it's with the instructor standing there doing it and them trying to look over each other's shoulders. So yeah, you're right. If we don't, as like the senior guys, take advantage and show them how to do that, they're not going to know.
Right.
And that's not their fault.
Yeah. And the same thing with the building construction. I mean, it's you and I had conversations, and I know I've watched your stuff too. And it really is. I mean, it definitely is one of those arts that is fading away. And so if we don't keep it up, if we don't bring it back, because those buildings are going to be around a lot longer than we are.
Oh yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Sure. Right. And the saving grace of building construction is regardless of the runs, it's inherently going to be in a building. I mean, obviously we're not all wildland firefighters. So even if it's the most ridiculous, erroneous run, it's still in the building. So there's always an opportunity there for a building construction, you know, nugget of knowledge. Or relevance.
One of my favorite quotes is, I think I'm pretty sure Steve Robertson that said it, but I never waste a run. like, we always complain about EMS runs or whatever, but like, I love that, you know, no matter why, like you said, whatever stupid run you're on in a building, take advantage of it, especially if you have newer people on your truck, to be like, hey, look, that right there, that's a cockpit vent, or like, hey, look, these back windows have bars on them. You know, what, how would we take these bars off? You're already, half the problem is getting people out the door and off the couch, right? You're already out the door. So take 5 minutes and make that run last longer and, you know, learn something from it.
So like even the most EMS coded out department in the nation still is going to call some buildings. So that's why it's, I think it's a really good subject. And you're really starting to, I think in some ways see it as a, starting to have a little bit of a renaissance, and it is starting to come back. Doesn't matter if it's old buildings or new buildings. The point is you got to know about your environment one way or another. If you're I mean, what you're doing in the environment might change, the environment might change, but you still have to know about the environment you're operating in. So even if you don't do fires, you still got to know about what's going on. Like for EMS runs, it's still applicable. Even for non-fire calls, very applicable in the buildings. So, you know, entrances, egresses, different accesses for different rooms, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and you find the craziest stuff. I mean, that's, you walk in on a medical call and you're looking around and you're like, what does that door go to in the floor? And they're like, oh, we got like a triple sub basement.
Sure, exactly. I mean, you got to know all sorts of stuff. And then you get a, you know, a water main break later that night. Now where's the water shut off? Oh, no, this is that weird hatch you discover in that weird room. You know what I mean? Just a lot of reasons why you should know where's the elevator shut off at, you know?
Yeah.
So all sorts of stuff like that.
One of the things, and it was so cool to hear stories. I never actually got to meet him, but Terrence Hatton from FDNY. And the stories that you heard about him and his knowledge of Manhattan and how, like, he would literally, there's an episode of Rescue Me, and there's a character who says something like, yeah, it's no big deal. You just go like four doors down and go through the lobby and hang a left, and you know, there's an access door, and then you can get through that way. And they're like, how does he know that?
Right.
That was Terrence Hatton. Like, he knew all these different things about all these different buildings. And so, like, I've always strived to kind of be like that. I don't, you know, a lot of our buildings in our district are similar, but they all have a little oddity. And so I want to know all those things.
And there's something to be said about departments that constantly rotate crews or supervisors. Like, maybe not a good idea, because how do you get that knowledge? You, I mean, think about it. That's a time-based skill. And that's, you don't got to rotate. If you're going to rotate, you know, you can do that, but maybe not rotate everyone. There's got to be someone there that can stay there for a decade or something and really get that invested time into the environment. Because you're right. I see that in my job all the time, where we might have, you know, that 20, 30 year guy who's been on that company for decades, knows all that stuff, knows where the FTC is at, knows where the power switch is at, just, you know, knows where the hidden door is, you know, in the hallway they walled off years ago before the rehab in the 90s.
Right. Another guy that's really good at that is Chief Renessi. From Ohio, they had that big Main Street fire back this spring, and I listened to their radio traffic, and I don't remember what it was he was telling them where it was, but it was exactly like that. He's like four doors down the hallway, up the stairs, back. You know, you could tell he had been in that building over and over again. There was zero question of where it was, and like that's the kind of people that we need.
And you can do that on the front end too, just with newer people, by just paying attention. You know, after every EMS run, I remember my senior man doing this when I had like a week on the job. He's like, "Hey, how many windows is on the second floor of that building?" I was like, what? I can even tell you like what color the door was, you know? And he's like, see, he's like, you need to start paying attention. Every time you go in a building, you need to start remembering where things are at. Start spotting windows just subconsciously. Even I'm not even paying attention, but you are paying attention in a way. So that was something that was kind of hammered into me early on. So.
Yeah. And it's not like picking on your new guys either, right? But it's getting them off their phones, and it's building like, you know, crew integrity. It's getting everybody to trust each other. Like if I know that he looks at a building and can notice all that stuff, like I know he's paying attention on the fire ground too. Right. So builds trust in each other too.
I mean, yeah, I mean, this all goes into situational awareness, but like how do you instill that early on? And, you know, for your small departments too, when we go and do these classes, you know, it's awesome to see the senior members when we're doing a Main Street class and route on Main Street looking at these buildings, the senior members just come to life with all these stories.
Right.
Like, I remember when that was on fire and this is how we got up there, and this, and it really, we step back and let them teach the class. It's awesome to see happen. So it's really organic kind of, you know, I guess a chemistry. It's pretty neat.
So how do you guys in your department like create buy-in as far as like understanding building construction? Is that something that's like inherent? Everybody just kind of already does it, or do you kind of have to kind of motivate people to get out and do it?
So it depends. It can come down a couple different ways. There is the ram down your throat, you know, we're going to go out and do building inspections and you will go walk every building, you know, that kind of thing. And then there's the more organic, like going out with the crew. I really enjoy the going out with the crew part more. Yeah, we go and do like building inspections, but we also have a building inspector. So that's kind of his thing. And so what ends up happening is we'll tag along and he'll do the intricate, like going through every single thing. And we just do like an overview.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But when we go out as a crew, we're not on anybody's time frame. You know, it's kind of like what we're doing. And we're lucky enough that we have a really good relationship with a lot of the businesses in town. They're kind of few and far between that won't let us in or mm-hmm. won't allow us to come
right,
in.
Right, sure.
And so they're usually real cool about it. But yeah, I mean, there's a, it's right down the street from our fire station. There's a, a fertilizer storage place. Mm-hmm. And so they're really cool. They're like, hey, anytime you guys want to come in, take a look, you know, sure. and anytime they modify things, they let us know. But yeah, we try to keep it as organic as possible because mm-hmm. that's easy to get buy-in on.
Right.
Sure. It's just the crew going out and messing around. Hey, while we're out, let's stop by and take a look. And you know, so it's not, oh man, I got to go do inspections all day. And then right. I got stuff that I need to work on. So it, yeah, we'll do it if it's forced upon us, but doing it organically is so much better.
Sure. Yeah. You know, like you bring up a good point. Like as soon as you start calling them inspections, that puts the owners on the defense, right?
Yeah.
Like, ooh, like, you know, they're thinking like fines and shutdowns. But if you call them familiarization and you tell them that when you get there, you know, like, hey, we're just here, you know, if your building's ever on fire, you know, we want to know where things are at, help you, you know, basically, you know, you can, you know, help you help us. And they're cool with it. And then they start really telling you about the building. You might get a history lesson on the building, learn all sorts of cool stuff, right? And you can go anywhere. But and like I said, if you have a fire inspection bureau, but that's, they can have that job, right?
Right.
Like we're just there to kind of, you know, learn some stuff for everyone's benefit. And then you can enhance that with, I know some places bring like a bag of rope, a 200-foot bag of rope, 50-foot knots in it, pre-connect, see where you can get, depending on where your rig's parked. If you're on a ladder company, you can do the thing with the outriggers to see where your ladder can reach.
Yep.
You know, there's all sorts of stuff to really make these familiarizations just better and more buy-in. You can really take it to the next level of more than just building stuff. You know, you can actually work some tactical methodology into that.
And, like your informal pre-plans.
Right.
And I think that's a good idea for like the senior guys, especially to kind of, I don't want to say quiz the newer members, but I don't have a better word for it. But like, you know, what would you do here? And then let them come up with their idea. And then they can, you know, give their opinion also like, okay, well, maybe I wouldn't take the line there. I would stretch to the store instead, that kind of thing. And then it lets everybody bounce ideas off each other because we can all even learn from the newer guys too, right? They'll notice Absolutely. Something. They'll notice something that we didn't. And the 30-year-old guy is going to obviously notice way more than the, you know, 30-day guy.
You know, we used to do a thing called, you know, tri-monthlies where we would have to go and sketch the plan. It would be a general plot plan and then a floor plan. And I mean, that it's just like taking notes. I mean, you're going to remember something better if you're looking at it and writing it. Right.
Right.
So mm-hmm. that was just a good way for me. I thought helped me early on. And those obviously went into a file and probably went to a garbage can. I have no idea. But the point was, is
yeah, nobody wants to keep those right. around. Yeah. We'll just throw them out. It'll be fine.
The digital age, you know? So, I mean, but the point was, that was a new guy thing. No, the senior guy wasn't going to be drawn, you know,
right.
But the new kid was, which was me. And then, you know, I was learning, you know, so I mean, I was drawing the floor plan. I was finding the gas meter, finding the FTC, finding the electrical panel, all the shutoffs, you know, the roof access, you know, that's another thing too. Is like, how do we get to the roof at 3 a.m.? It's a weird building, right. You know, where's the roof scuttle at? Is it locked? You know, stuff to, no one wants to force a padlock on a roof scuttle at 3 a.m. That's pain.
Knox box, make sure the keys
right,
work.
Where the Knox right. box is
at.
Like
right, not, does the actual key
right,
work?
The right keys in the Knox right. box.
You know how many times I pop one of those things open and I'm like,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Empty. So.
Well, you are headed to a wing contest, right?
Yeah, we're doing another episode of the Hot Seat tonight.
There we go. So we'll finish wrapping things up here, but thank you for joining us again. And in the future, check out his class. It sounds like it's fantastic. And tomorrow, this guy will be doing his aggressive interior firefighting here. So thanks again for everybody joining in. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Have a good day.